It's my pleasure to welcome Matthew Burns. Please welcome Matthew Burns.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Philip, for setting this up and keeping it going. Thanks to all y'all for showing up. And I don't know, we were talking earlier, and it's super nice day where I am, where we are in kind of upstate New York. And it's tough, you know, nice sunny Saturday afternoon. Thanks for taking the time. So I'm going to read a few from the book, a new one or two maybe that isn't in there. But yeah, I'm not, I promised my wife I wasn't going to babble because she's like, you talk too much, just read the damn poems. But yeah, most of these are from my book called Imagine the Glacier, which you can get on my website. It's over in the chat right there. It came out last March from Finishing Line Press. And yeah, a lot of it, there's a lot of nature stuff you'll hear in here. Some love poems that don't really sound like love poems, which I guess is the best kind. So this first one is called The Pig, the Hog. Dawn so cold that a fat pig, a hog, was found alive, but frozen on its side to the ground. There must have been mud when it laid its pink bulk down last night. We walked around and tried to figure just how to free it without too much blood or suffering. No pry bars or tow hooks, the ground too hard for shovels. And the pig, the hog, that rooted largeness exhaled into the morning but did not struggle or cry out. It laid and blinked its tired eyes when we stroked its head and put feed to its warm snout that sniffed for the rising day. We waited, and when it finally stood, unlatched from the cold stone returning to mud under a higher sun, there was a thin outline of its whole body left behind. I put my hand in that memory of the pig and could feel each minute of her long night pressing back, and I was scared. A lot of Western poems in here. Before I moved to back to New York State, we lived in Washington State, Central Washington, Yakima, Washington, where all the hops are from. So I have a whole bunch of like these Western poems. And this one's a train poem, actually. It's called Great Northern, if any of you are familiar, and it's to my wife on the train. I should tell you about the view I have, of the way I can see from my seat the headlamp of the engine shining into the night ahead, of the slice of black sky appearing above the cut, around the bend of track that bends above the Snohomish, then in turn bends through the northern reaches of the Cascades, like an endless white string or strand of hair laid down among rocks and trees. We have been here before, but not in the night, in winter, not wrapped in the black weight of mountains that make us feel alone. I feel alone, and I should tell you this. That would erase this weight and leave its gray ghost to sit beside me on the other side of the window, like a reflection dragged across the last visible piles of snow. I should tell you all of this, and that as we roll through the giant unknowing night, through some crossing in Glacier or Whitefish or Libby, and you are lit by a passing streetlight or the high beams from some car waiting, heavy with loneliness, for the train to pass, I can see for miles and miles ahead. Let's see, do a few. Yeah, there's a lot of, the book is a lot of Western poems and a lot of like hometown poems, kind of, because I'm from Binghamton, originally Binghamton, New York, for those of you who don't know. So I have a lot of like material from there, as we all do. And this one, if you looked at the press release or the one that Philip put up, there's a sample poem of mine on there called How to Go Home. And I figured I might as well read that one for you. How to Go Home. Head north. Forget the warehouses held up by planks and the railroad tracks coated black with coal. Or rather, do not hate them the way you did when they bent into you, tall and long in their reach, deep too. Dust under your nails, grease in your veins. Look at the rivers and their swell. They have nothing against you. They do not care, not about the time in 89 in January when you almost drowned, setting old tires on fire and sliding them across the ice like cheap comets. Your weight too much, the stink of the melting rubber, the heat too much, and then the cold that felt hot for a good minute once you were in, neck deep. And they still do not care about the thousand small rocks you've kicked from the trestle, nor the heavy ones you heaved at the coffins when they floated south after May rains washed them from their plots, pulled them away to new grounds downstream. The river does not even remember you. Keep in mind, the firehouse and the creamery and the public pool from first grade all do not know your name. Even if they're still there, holding on to the ground beneath, the ground holding on to, the way everything here holds on, desperately, so will not be ripped away. Behold, beheld, stand on the hills, sit in the parking garage, lie down in the bottle return at the grocery store. It all points to the same sure thing. It will be waiting when you come back, all of it. Yeah, it's a straight, that's like a Binghamton documentary poem, so might as well. If you haven't been, you kind of have now. So, oh, let's see, going faster, slow it down a little bit. Another one got a lot of garden poems, outdoorsy type stuff, just because I hang out with my wife, and after you get done writing about the one person you hang out with, you gotta write about whatever else is out there. So I hang out with plants a bunch. And this one's called Rhubarb. The poison lives only in the leaves, thick with instant bitterness to warn you. And my Polish grandmother said this was to kill off the lazy ones, the stupid ones, the ones who wanted things handed to them, who couldn't find it in themselves to dig. And planting it told everyone you didn't mind dirt under your nails, that you knew life was hard work if you did it right. So she grew more than the whole family could eat. By May, her narrow terraced backyard in the city's first ward was a lapping sea of palm-sized leaves. By June, a solid ruff of green. A pruning knife's hooked blade biting through the stalks with her flick of her wrist and a quick snap. The one time I tried this, I sliced deep into my thumb knuckle at first swipe. We both read inside, me, the rhubarb. That's the stuff I didn't really think about at 10. How everything bleeds, how everything must die somehow. The stupid ones poisoned, the hard workers heart-worn and wrecked. We ate the rhubarb raw, stripped of all its leaves. Dipped in sugar, it lingered bitter on our tongue as a little inoculation against the worst of what was yet to come. Timings are off. I don't know, three or four more. How about that? We'll see how it goes. Another Western poem. This one, sorry, Jill, this one needs a little explanation. It's called Virga, which is a weather phenomenon that where it's raining up high, but that rain never makes it to the ground. So it kind of like evaporates before it hits the ground. It's called Virga. And that happened all the time where we lived in Washington, which is kind of the high desert. So I think we lived out there for 4 or 5 months before we even saw rain hit the ground. And we like immediately documented it because we didn't realize how much we missed the rain. So this one's called Virga. I'm cutting the sleeves off of every shirt I own and drinking warm wine from a chipped jam jar. The thunder and heat lightning that breaks over the ridge is thick June's gnashing of teeth. This and this and this I point to in the dark is me trying to say we should never be far away from whatever has grown to be called home. I am. We are far away from home and lit in intervals by orange and blue light from 10,000 feet up. It stands our fine hairs on end and runs down my arm, bare shoulder to bare wrist to trembling hand and glass. And the air is warm and tastes like concentric spheres of sky pressed into a pair of ions that sit on my lips like invisible shards of glass. Cut that skin and move to yours when we kiss and sweat under the ridge, suddenly lit and now suddenly dark again. All right. Let's see. I had a few lined up. Apparently, my math was off. Do a little slightly longer one. Okay, yeah. There's, like I said, there's a bunch of love poems that kind of sound like love poems, but don't. So I'll just keep going with that. This one's called Working Late. And in true poetry fashion, it has an epigraph in Latin. So fancy. But the epigraph goes, in absentia uxorum, which you can Google translate that if you want. Working late. We decided. It is you who must go first. You said so years ago. And I will eventually find the thin road leading to acceptance of that. I can sleep every night under the mantle of assurance that says, the forest is larger than I can conceive. And there are train tracks winding their iron lines into every lonely corner of someplace we've never been. Or more simply, when you're gone, I will be too. Long gone. One disappearance demands another, a balance. When you leave, leave knowing this. But tonight is filled by nothing but wind. That is how it will be then. I know. Void and vacuum, replaced by the constant dragging through of something familiar, but still somehow transient, always. Some memory I create, so I can sleep beneath a mantle of trees and stars. I'm saying this, we cannot hold on to anything beyond whatever we have right now. And even then, whatever we call missing is just a circle around a hole, the thing that defines the thing that is gone. It is nearly 10 o'clock on a Thursday night in February, and there is a whole forest of wind winding its iron way through every little crevice in this building we call a home. I am alone for the first time in nearly 20 years and feel like I am disappearing into some dream of trees that refuse to move for anything. That makes no sense, I know. There is no way to make sense of this. This is someplace we've never been. And I cannot find my way for want of your voice to guide me. Stick with the love poem stuff. Do two more love poems and call it a day. And they all have epigraphs, because that's, I'm realizing the more poems I write are like in response to stuff that I'll see online or something, because that's how we interact with the world, right? So we'll do three more. This one's called Sailor's Delight, and it actually references a Bible verse, of all things, which is Matthew 16, 2 through 3, which feel free to look that one up and get the reference. Sailor's Delight. When I kiss my wife in the kitchen or the garden, when she comes down from upstairs where she has been reading or whatever, I kiss her forehead and put a hand on her cheek, because this is how you live after another 20 years. I'm four decades deep. Listen, this is how you live. Skin against skin on bone, warm and needy. The sun is high and bright today, and the sky will be red tonight. You know what they say, sailor's delight. So I'll push my thin lips against her head, wait for the day to rise, and pray the morning sky is gray. I don't usually read that one. That's a fun one to read. Do two more. I'll end with some new ones. This came out, I think, the Hudson Valley Writers Guild or Group. Put this out a couple of years ago. And it's a kind of the reference of the title. It's called We Were Not Warned Not to Laugh, which is a quote. It's part of some stuff that, if you remember Desiree Ferruz, this is from, an AG's confirmation hearings back during Trump times, I believe. Anyway, Desiree Ferruz was there watching it and said something, and she chuckled and got a felony charge brought up against her somehow. So dismissed, all good. Anyway, this is called We Were Not Warned Not to Laugh. My breath, an exhale might have, I admit, sounded something like a chortle. but it was more like the sound you make when asleep, but I was not asleep, and trying to shoo off some dreamed bear or other great threat. I did it again just the other night. It was a claustrophobic hallway, and something I feared, I knew, was near and threatening, and I could not find my voice to say no or go away. And in that anxiety, my heart woke me in the middle of a breath, moving beyond my body. Involuntary, an animal response. No, reaction. Thought was a lost ghost. I just breathed out. I heard myself sigh into the wide night. No one said I could not. No one was even there. All right. One more. This is a... It's just freshly printed. This is the first version. We'll see how it evolves. But again, thank you all very much for coming through. I'm looking forward to Allison's stuff and the open mic as well. I've been so detached from the poetry world for so long because of COVID, obviously, that it's cool to get back to it. So thanks again. This is, again, so many epigraphs. It's called Slow Dance with Vitreous Detachment. And it grew out of something I saw online, I don't know, some like Twitter or something, and somebody just a little quip about Leon Bridges. If you it's a long walk, sorry. Leon Bridges, soul R&B kind of singer, really old school, beautiful voice. Anyway, the joke was, and that's the quote of the epigraph, Leon Bridges makes music for white people to slow dance to in the kitchen, which is accurate. Slow dance with vitreous detachment. That's fine. Whatever, I know, because we have twice. First, years ago in the Smokies, while the all July fireworks shot up in blossoms from Dollywood into an embracing Tennessee night, and the lonely, lovely wail of a coal train echoed like everything I've ever wanted. And now, again, just a few minutes ago in our humid little kitchen with this weird cloud of anxiety above us, above me. I'm learning medicine is a gift and curse as we age. And her right eye has a sudden frightening darkness on the inside. And now life will take on a new face. But she kept time with a soft hand pat against my back while I hung on for dear life. I do not dance. And can barely understand why anyone would. I know there's something about the music and rhythm that hits something buried deep, but it's always been a foreign language to me. Beautiful, but accessible only in broken bites, a tongue I could never speak. If I needed to order a performance, I could manage a step and a joke, but in this late hot summer evening with fear and the ghost fist of uncertainty grinding its way through my gut, I moved in slow tempo with her, her hand the weight of a quarter note in the measure of my back, mine around her shoulders, enwrapped and holding on, while the pot on the stove steamed and boiled over its hardened lip. Thanks, everybody.